Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Caritas. Today is Monday, May 18th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. The title of today's podcast is Fed Speak and Risks Ahead. This is in direct response to yesterday's interview on 60 Minutes, where Scott Pelley interviewed Chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jay Powell. Of course, this is not their first interview together. Jay Powell has given a few of these interviews since he has been Chairman of the Federal Reserve. He even did one not so long ago with former chairman of the Federal Reserve, both Ben Bernanke and Janet Yellen. Typically, of course, when the Federal Reserve chairman comes out to speak, it's for a reason. They want to use this as a PR stunt, because that's all it was, unfortunately, and we're going to get into some of the details. You know, I watched it with the hope, foolish, silly me, with the hope that Scott Pelley would ask some difficult questions. Be respectful about it, but ask some difficult questions. Not a single one. There were no difficult questions whatsoever. It was a softball interview. And again, this is just part and parcel for the environment in which we live. Everything is commercialized because 60 Minutes loves to have this type of interview because they get to hype it. They get to send it out there on the commercial airwaves. They get to get big money advertising this interview, get a lot of eyeballs for this interview. And if you ask difficult questions, well, then maybe the chairman's not going to come back. This is the same thing that happened a couple weeks ago on Fox News, that virtual town hall with the president, the vice president, and the treasury secretary. Well, God forbid you ask these guys to their face difficult questions, because they might not want to come back because their feelings will get hurt or their egos will get dented a little bit. How dare you ask me a difficult question? How dare you defy my logic and reasoning? This is the world in which we live. So no difficult questions. Waste of time. You didn't learn anything unless you have been on Mars not paying attention to anything. Basic questions. Yeah, we have unemployment at this level. You know, we haven't seen that since the Great Depression. Really, Scott? Really, Mr. Pelley, that's the best you can come up with, telling everybody what we already know. Can it get worse? Well, of course it can get worse, and we're going to get into some of those details. But just a joke of an interview and a waste of time. But we're going to dissect a little bit further. Market performance today through the roof. 3-4%, depending on the index. Small cap index up 6%. Just completely through the roof. And of course, this is Monday, so this is off the back of the chairman's interview. What did he say? Well, we'll get into that. Is he the reason why the markets took off, or was it something else, a combination thereof? But right now in the overnight trading, we have the Dow Jones down about 0.4%, the S&P 500 down 0.3%, and NASDAQ 100 is in the red, but for all intents and purposes, it is flat. The Japanese market is trading up 1.74%. Stocks in Japan are hitting a 10-week high. A 10-week high for the Nikkei 225. This is off the back of news that came out this weekend that Japan is once again in another recession. So it makes perfect sense. You're in recession. Stocks take off. That's what happened. Across the pond in Europe, stocks rallied immensely over there as well. 4-5% depending on the index. A lot of this is probably off the back of the news we'll get into that's relating to U.S. markets, but also a pact, at least in the first stages, between France and Germany to throw more stimulus within the European Union. No surprise. Again, the tip of the iceberg. We are just getting started with the money printing, the borrowing, the deficit spending, stimulus after stimulus, and of course we use that term loosely, from governments the world over. And Australia is trading up bigly as well, up 1.8% in the cash trade at the time of this podcast. Huge moves in the commodity space, especially with oil. WTI trading at $31.77 a barrel. Brent at $34.46 a barrel. Natural gas also rallied big today, $1.77 per million British thermal units. Gold sold off today a little bit, but right now trading at $1,736 an ounce. Silver had a nice little run-up, a continuation from last week. Silver is trading at $17.08 per ounce. On the bond front, Uncle Sam's U.S. 10-year Treasury note yielding 0.71%. 5%. So a little bit of a inflation trade, I guess you can say, in regards to the commodity front. So a little bit of that divergence between gold and silver. Obviously, gold has been seen as that safe haven hedge bet against a lot of the unknowns, the geopolitical risks, the monetary policies that are taking place the world over, the fiscal policies that are taking place globally, everything. So one day does not make a trend. And even though you had this massive rally in the stock market, we're still range bound. I know it's hard to imagine that, but we really haven't moved much over the past 5-6 weeks, which is quite astonishing given all of the headlines and the back and forth. But that's exactly what it's been. It's been those back and forth ideas hitting the headlines, a lot of pushback. My belief is this is a bear market, thus this is a bear market rally. Very sharp drop-off that we witnessed. Very sharp pullback, if you will, or this V-shaped quote-unquote recovery in the stock market. This is part and parcel. This isn't anything that should shock anybody. Maybe the degree to which it occurred, maybe that could shock you. But nonetheless, this is sort of just history repeating itself, but we will see how this period of consolidation plays out. Now, history tells us if you go back to about the Great Depression, you can see this type of consolidation last for several months. And then, of course, back during that time, it continued its leg further down, another leg down, another leg down. Could this time, quote-unquote, be different, as they like to say, especially the bulls in the market? Yeah, I guess anything's possible with all of the money printing, all that spending, and people just seemingly forgetting anything that's going on that makes any sense. Of course, stocks can continue to rally, but we imagine that they will not be able to be that far disconnected from the economic realities that exist and persist. So it's a process. We say that here all the time. Why? Because it is a process. Nothing goes up in a straight line. Nothing goes down in a straight line. And it's just not going to happen overnight. But we do believe with the underlying economic structure that exists and has existed for quite a while, pre-COVID-19, remember this, this is very important to stress for you to understand this and to tell your friends and family about all of the underlying weakness that was occurring before the onset of COVID-19. And now this is a perfect excuse for policymakers, central bankers, and politicians to use as an excuse to wash their hands completely clean of this, for no leadership to come to the fore, no truth-telling whatsoever. Oh, well, nobody could have seen this coming. It's not your fault. Let's just print and spend, print and spend, print and spend. We have to print because we're broke, so we can't spend it until we print it. I mean, this is just a joke. Again, as I like to say, you got broke states going to a broke government asking for a bailout, asking a central banker to counterfeit the money because that's exactly what it is. They print it. Let's throw it into the system and hope something sticks. That's not a good situation as far as I'm concerned. But slightly getting back to the divergence here between gold and silver. Silver might have it a little bit right now. It could potentially be a sweet spot for silver. One, on the monetary front, which we talk about quite a bit here. But secondly, maybe if the market believes that this rally can continue, or that now this money that is all being printed and spent finds its way somewhere, because it's going to, if it starts to find its way now more so into commodities, well, guess what, folks? Silver is a commodity. It has a big play in a lot of industrials, solar panels, a lot of 5G, you know, communications, a lot of things that are wired for the 21st century involves that of silver. And then when you take into consideration the supply chain disruptions, and you have to understand something when it comes to the mining of silver. There aren't just silver mines, okay? There are, but silver is a byproduct of a lot of other mining operations. A lot of that is shut down. And it's not easy just to flip the switch and to get a lot of these mines back onto the market. And then, obviously, a lot of these mines are overseas. So is there going to be an opening up of restrictions? Can this good or whatever the product, good service is, can it make its way back into the USA? Can it make its way into Russia, China, Italy, anywhere, right? Are those travel restrictions going to be lifted? All right, so that's going to be something that's also going to throw a little bit of a wrench into this system, which we've been talking about here for quite a while, is those supply chain disruptions. So this is going to affect the equilibrium of supply and demand. And again, if you're going to look to purchase silver outright physically, it's tough to get. So many items are still with a delay, long lag time. And if and when you can get it, you're paying quite the premium over that of spot. So understand that there is already a high demand for people looking at this from an investment standpoint, probably more so, at least at this juncture, I would believe, from a monetary standpoint. But you might get that wheelhouse here scenario. The question is, will we see that, and how long will it play out? But again, I do believe that both gold and silver are in the midst of a bull market run, and I do think this will persist for quite a while, simply because of all of the actions that are undertaken by central banks and politicians the world over. So perhaps another reason why the markets took off, and it was, is because there was more headline news, of course, headlines, nothing fundamental, but just something headline, something positive, I guess you could say, with another vaccine headline, this one from Moderna, another pharmaceutical, biological, or, you know, biotech company. Oh, now we have our vaccine and we have early trials. You know, a handful of people we've tested thus far. A handful. Important to stress this. A handful of people have tested, you know, they've done well with this early testing of their version of a vaccine. It's all it took. It's all it took for this type of a rally. Remember, this happened a couple weeks ago, and we discussed this here with Gilead Sciences, because they had their therapies and everything. Oh, everything's positive. And again, we said, oh, hey, look at that memo that they released too. That was only a handful of people as well, because that's what it is in these early stages. Now, look, I hope they're right. I hope this is positive news that comes to fruition, but this is ridiculous. But the markets don't care. The algorithms don't care. They're just, you know, they're programmed to scour the internet, find a positive headline, and boom, buy, 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 buy. And that's exactly what happens. We'll worry about the reality later. So pay attention to that. And the other interesting thing about this vaccine, maybe it's coincidental, maybe it isn't, because during that 60 Minutes interview, one of the questions that came up was, you know, Mr. Powell, what is going to get the economy back on track? Is it really going to take a vaccine to do it? Yeah, that was his response, yes. Yes, I think it's really going to take a vaccine to really put all of this behind us. All of this talk of vaccine has me concerned. I mean, what are they going to do? They're going to fast track this? Operation Warp Speed, we talked about that last Friday, right? This is the president's, you know, his Manhattan Project. The Manhattan Project was to, you know, form to create a nuclear bomb. This Operation Warp Speed is to develop a vaccine by the end of this year, which would be record-breaking. Believe me when I tell you, I think like the average time for a vaccine is about 4 years. And we've been told consistently here, well, you know, the earliest maybe we could get 12 months, 18 months. Now it's going to be by the end of this year. I'm not going to trust them. But all of this talk about vaccinations and the president saying that he is going to use the military to distribute it or administer this, what does that mean? Is the military going to go door to door and inoculate all of us? Are they going to give us proof? Something, a wristband, something that proves that we have been vaccinated? I mean, I'm not going to trust this nonsense. Believe me when I tell you. I mean, it just keeps going. I don't trust this government as far as I can throw it. You can't throw this monstrosity that far. So I'm not going to trust them. You do what you want, but I'm not going to trust them. But it's very interesting that the talk from everybody, vaccine, 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 vaccine. So isn't it interesting you have Jay Powell mentioning, yep, it's going to take a vaccine to really have any type of sustainable recovery. And then boom, next day, before the markets start trading, hey, we got good results with the vaccine. Early stages, a handful of people tested positive. Everything seems to be good. Was it coincidental? Is it fixed? You tell me. But I thought that was interesting. Unbelievable. So getting to a little bit of the interview, I did make sure I saved one little excerpt of this. Let me find it for you 1 second. Again, that exchange between Jay Powell and Scott Pelley of 60 Minutes. And it was blunt, so I got to give credit here to both sides for this one. This is Scott Pelley. Question, fair to say you simply flooded the system with money? Powell, yes, we did. That's another way to think about it. We did. Pelley, where did it come from? Do you just print it? We print it digitally, Powell says. So as a central bank, we have the ability to create money digitally. And we do that by buying treasury bills or bonds for other government-guaranteed securities. And that actually increases the money supply. We also print actual currency, and we distribute that through the Federal Reserve banks. So, do you just print it? Yep, we just print it. We just make it up. Why? Because we can. This is the financial world of Oz. We can do whatever we please. Who overrules you? I mean, these would have been some simple questions that Scott Pelley could have asked that would have been pressing questions to the man as well. Softball. Again, as we like to say here, we pick up on what Jay Powell typically says during his press conferences following a FOMC meeting when they make a decision on interest rates. And he usually opens with saying the Federal Reserve is here to help the American people or to work for the American people. Simple question from Scott Pelley would have been, what Americans are you referring to, Mr. Powell? Are you referring to the top 1%, top 10% of the income bracket? Or are you referring to people on fixed income, Social Security, reliant on the government, the middle class? What Americans are you actually talking about? And then provide him with some wealth inequality statistics, which are staggering. Talk about how major traders and investors have called quantitative easing the largest wealth transfer in the history of mankind. Do you contend with that? Do you agree? Why or why not? These are basic questions. Is there such thing as a free lunch, Mr. Powell? Mr. Chairman, all of this money printing, all of this government spending, how much does it cost, or is it all free? Are there any negative consequences to this, or is it all good? If why, why not, why? You get what I'm saying. This is basic stuff. You say in your interview here, Mr. Chairman, Congress is to do more. Can you elaborate? Of course, they never want to go down that line. But can you elaborate? Why should Congress do more? Congress just borrowed $3 trillion. The federal government through the entire year only brings in $3.5 trillion. So you want them to do more, but with what money? They don't have it. Can you elaborate on that, please? Of course, he didn't ask that question. Your financial stability report from a couple years ago was highlighting a major factor of corporate debt, the leverage that exists on corporate balance sheets, that and leveraged loans. You highlight how if you enter an adverse economic period, such as a recession, which we are clearly in, that this could cause a massive negative effect. Can you elaborate? Can you explain how this could affect the economy? No question about that. You mentioned in your most recent financial stability report, commercial real estate is a huge risk. Can you elaborate on that? How many jobs can be lost in this area? Nothing. You got none of this. These are basic questions. You don't need to be an economist. You don't need to be a business major to come up with this stuff. This is simple stuff. I mean, then you can get into the ideological stuff if you want to with them. Do you believe in free market capitalism? Are stocks allowed to fall? Are bond prices allowed to fall? If they're allowed to, then why are you backstopping them? Do you believe, Mr. Chairman, that investors are intelligent people, especially people who consider themselves investors? I would assume he would say yes. Well, then aren't they aware of the risks that are involved when they purchase equities or they buy a bond? I would think his answer to that would also be yes. Well, then why are you backstopping them? Aren't they aware that they can lose their entire investment? Aren't they aware that a company can file bankruptcy? Well, then why are you backstopping them? Is this how American capitalism is supposed to work? Is this free market capitalism or is this something else? When is this going to stop? Ben Bernanke told us a decade ago during the great financial crisis that all of this quantitative easing, this monetary experiment, was going to be temporary and that the Federal Reserve would normalize once again. Well, you attempted to normalize. Stocks cratered. Wall Street threw a hissy fit. Thunder Thumbs threw a hissy fit. You cratered and did a 180. And now we're off to the moon. Money printing, interest rates, again at the zero bound. You couldn't normalize then. How are you going to normalize now? Again, all basic, simple questions. The Federal Reserve is a creature of Congress. But who can overrule the Federal Reserve once the committee makes a decision? Can the president overrule you? If not, why not? If yes, would you listen? Would you do what the president wanted as opposed to what you guys decided if it was in contrast? Can Congress overrule you? And of course, the answer to these questions is no, they can't overrule them. Former chairman of the Federal Reserve, Alan Greenspan, who is responsible for a lot of this stuff, by the way, with the Greenspan put, the Fed put, anytime there's market turmoil, anything, something sells off, oh, don't worry, the Federal Reserve will come, backstop everything. So Greenspan is sort of the root of all of this, or at least a big chunk of the root. Let's put it that way. He stated openly in an interview, I think it was a PBS interview years ago, what should the relationship be between the Federal Reserve Chairman and the President of the United States? Well, quite frankly, this was his response. I'm paraphrasing, but this is Alan Greenspan's response. Well, quite frankly, it doesn't matter because the President can't overrule what the Federal Reserve does. Neither can Congress. So it doesn't matter. So they are above the law, just like everybody else. If you're in Washington, D.C., the President's above the law. Hillary Clinton is above the law. Joe Biden, Barack Obama, they're all above the law. Congress is above the law. The Federal Reserve is above the law. Two-tiered system of justice in this country. All above the law can get away with whatever they want to get away with. You want to go to war? Go ahead and do it. Kill as many people as you want. Cause as much refugees as you want. Be my guest. Go ahead. No problem. Nothing to see here. You want to abuse your office, weaponize a Justice Department, weaponize the CIA, the NSA, the FBI. Go ahead. Do it all. Do it all. There's no repercussions. You can do whatever you want. You want to turn that printing press on to the records that you have never seen before. And in fact, if you look at Money Supply, M1 and M2, you can find, again, you can find this simply on the Federal Reserve economic data, which we always reference here. You can find that very simply. Just type in M1. Type in M2, you'll see it. These graphs are through the roof. Okay? No surprise. And when you look at them from a year-over-year change, history in the making. You've never seen this type of an increase in the money supply. And again, is there any cost to this? That would have been a basic question. That would have been a basic question for Mr. Pelley to ask the chairman of the Federal Reserve. But getting back to Mr. Greenspan and the Federal Reserve being above the law, I mean, this is supposed to be a system of checks and balances. If you can't be overruled, then what's that saying? Because the president can be overruled, right? He can veto something, and then if there's a big enough majority in both houses of Congress, well, that bill can still get passed. He can be overruled. Maybe he does something that goes up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court says, no, you can't do that. And of course, the president can check Congress because he can veto. And maybe Congress doesn't have the votes to override the veto. So the president says, nope, can't do it. Congress can change a law that affects a Supreme Court ruling. That's how it works. There are checks and balances. That's how it's supposed to work. But if you have this fourth entity over here, which is an extremely powerful entity, which is the root of a lot of our problems here, because it funds everything, right? It's that facilitator of everything. Because then where's the oversight? There is none. There is none. He gets to march up there, whoever the Federal Reserve Chairman is, twice a year to Congress, and they're asked softball questions because no politician wants to grill him. None of them. Got no backbone. Probably don't even fully understand what the Federal Reserve is. And then those who do, they say, oh, well, my goodness. I can go out there and do something that is very politically unfavorable and raise everybody's taxes, or I can just have these guys on the sly do whatever they want, but we know that they're going to have our backs. And instead of raising everybody's tax, we'll just have them print money. But again, there's no free lunch, so that's going to be inflation, which is a tax that nobody votes for, which is also very un-American. But we're not going to worry about that because it's politically profitable for us. And then everybody's cost of living is going to go up. But don't worry about it. And then these people at the Federal Reserve are supposed to be applauded for being geniuses, coming up with these monstrosity policies of a quantitative easing. And they get all the credit. Anything sound wrong with any of that? I think the whole picture does. But that's the world we have adopted. That is the system we have adopted. And nobody says a damn thing. Nobody says a damn thing. It's a financial and economic coup d'etat in our face, which I have been saying here for weeks when all of this started. This goes back at least to March, because that's when I published my letter, Representation and Recourse. And if you have not read it yet, please do at thecapitalnews.com. Copy and paste it. Use it as your own. Send it to your congressmen, your senators, like I did. Enough is enough. I mean, I had no idea how much more was going to come down the pike, but we knew it was going to be more. Tunes of trillions. Trillions and trillions and trillions. By the way, we don't have it. So again, I go back to that question I asked earlier. If Jerome Powell thinks that the federal government is supposed to do more, with what money? So clearly he is ready to print as much as it takes. No accountability. And then lastly here, we have President Trump is declaring that he is on hydroxychloroquine, God help us all. Look, I'm not a doctor, but I have not heard anybody, and of course I don't watch and I don't read everything, nobody can, but I have not heard any physician say that hydroxychloroquine is a preventative medication for COVID-19. I have heard that if it is taken very early on after diagnosis and actually really acquiring COVID-19 very early on and catching it very early, that hydroxychloroquine may have a positive effect for some patients. But nowhere have I seen it or heard it being a preventative measure. If somebody has, please send that to me. And I don't want to hear it from Fox News unless Fox News is citing The Lancet or the New England Journal of Medicine or something like that. And don't send it to me from MSNBC or anywhere else unless somebody is citing that article so I can find that article and read it for myself. So this begs the question, does the president have COVID-19? Especially if hydroxychloroquine is not a preventative measure. So does he have it, or is he lying? And would anybody doubt for a second that this is something that the president would lie about? Of course, he would lie about this in a heartbeat. He doesn't care. He likes the drama. He likes the publicity. He likes the distraction. He even said so pretty much today. I just wanted to see your guys' reaction when I told you. I've been taking it for 2 weeks, week and a half. Just wanted to see your reaction. Yeah, we'll see what happens. What the hell do you have to lose? All right. Well, good luck, Mr. President. I hope you don't have it. And if you're taking this stuff, I hope it works for you. I really do. But somebody's going to have to send something to me that says this is preventative. Otherwise, he has it or he's lying. So we'll see what happens there. And then lastly, real quickly, U.S. debt clock, right? USdebtclock.org. We did this last week because of the massive buildup in the national debt. And last week we said, you know, just over the course of a weekend, you had the national debt go up basically the equivalent of Bill Gates' net worth. Well, over the course of the past week, you got the same business. We now stand at $25,276,000,000,000. $25,276,000,000,000 is our U.S. national debt. It is on fire. It is rapidly growing higher as we speak. But that's basically another net worth of Bill Gates, probably a little bit more than that, over the past week. And again, all of this Looney Tune mathematics that comes from the left that look at you with a straight face and say, all we have to do is tax these individuals 2%, 2 cents, 2 pennies on every dollar above a certain threshold, and we'll be able to pay for everything. The Green Deal, spaceships that travel from Venus on Monday, you're in Mars on Tuesday, and then you're back on Earth for the weekend for a version of show and tell, and then we do it all over again. That's all we have to do. Just tax these people 2 pennies for every dollar. Who's in charge of the education system again in this country? Oh, that's right. Fed speak and risks ahead. We know what the risks ahead are. We talk about them here all the time. But that's the baloney you're going to get from the Federal Reserve and from anybody in media. because there is nobody who is after the truth. It's just to get the ratings. It's just to get the eyeballs. Because the questions that I asked here were simple and could have been asked very respectfully. And the man wouldn't have been able to answer them. Not a one. Thank you so much for joining me. Please like, share, subscribe, get the word out, leave your comments. We do love hearing from you. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.